it's messy and you won't always know the thing that you need. You know, that the students will sometimes know more than you, particularly with tech. And I think just embracing the mess and that not every lesson will go to plan. I feel like there's a perfectionist in me that wants to nail every lesson as the perfect lesson, and you come away kind of kicking yourself and that didn't work. Or, but this kind of learning isn't, you know, follow the bouncing ball and in a straight line and you go off on tangents. And so I think just be prepared or willing just to follow the student's lead a little bit and to be messy and noisy and maybe not the same sort of traditional teaching and learning that you would have been used to.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to the Physics Ed Podcast. This week we're speaking with Rachel Lear, who is a science specialist at a West Beachborough Primary School, a school in Western Australia that is completely nailing STEM delivery for primary students. From teaching science with a hands-on STEM focus to creating a girls' STEM club after school, integrating digital tech into science, all sorts of stuff is happening out in that school. And more importantly, Rachel's sharing that knowledge through Primary STEM Chat, this Thursday evening delivery through Twitter, where you can definitely join in. It's kind of like a PLN for the STEM friendly in the elementary space. So without further ado, let's just jump on into this interview. We've got a lot to learn.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know me, I'm Rachel Lair. I'm a primary science and digital tech specialist teacher. So that's a role I've been doing since 2011 now, and with a short little break of classroom teaching in the middle. But yeah, I'm very passionate about science teaching and STEM and using digital tech authentically in my class. So they're my real things that I focus on. And for those of you that haven't joined Twitter yet, which you should, I'm also a co-host of Primary STEM Chat. So that's a weekly chat that we have on Thursday evenings and talking all things STEM. So they're some of the things I'm doing.
How'd you fall into that?
Yeah, good question. It was actually another Twitter educator who was passionate about STEM contacted me and said that she felt, I'm assuming you're talking about STEM chat, by the way.
Yeah.
She felt that there was just sort of a gap in that primary STEM arena. And there were a lot of educators that felt like they didn't know their way forward with STEM in a primary setting. So we just chatted it over and how we thought that would look. And we agreed that it was really a gap and that it was something that we needed help in ourselves. And we were sure other people were in the same spot. They wanted guidance. So it's been a really great initiative. I'm quite proud of the way it's moved forward and it's building momentum, and there's great educators, not just in Australia, but around the world that are joining, and I learn so much every week. So that's been something I've been really proud of, the fact that we've created something that's useful and as a professional learning tool in STEM.
And I tell you what, the topics are really quite broad, really. I mean, it's STEM, but it's all sorts of stuff. So sometimes it's about, like, in just looking back over the past, you had gamifications in STEM. You're going, remembering M in STEM. I mean, that's probably a good idea, seeing it's part of the acronym. Doing competitions, yeah, in STEM learning. All this sort of stuff is, you know, highly important in classroom. And, I mean, imagine that you've got people all over the globe joining in at this point now.
Oh, and definitely. And we try to vary the topics quite a bit so that we are targeting all the different letters in the acronym for a start. So we've done the science, we've done the tech, the engineering and the maths. But even just topical things, like you'll see this week's chat is going to be about some of the media attention that's been coming around STEM, both positive and negative of late. So we are, the topics tend to be what do people want to know right now, and we're trying to get our community involved in what they want to learn about, and also getting lots of guest hosts coming in. So yeah, it's been really great that we're actually trying to target the learning to what people want.
With STEM, I mean, what letter tends to be the most, the one that everyone seems to love to talk about the most? I mean, obviously everyone's got their own you know, preferences and their backgrounds and all that sort of thing. But what do you tend to see bubble up a lot in your community that, you know, maybe there's, maybe it's more around tech or engineering? What's the one that everyone seems to love to do more?
Well, I've got probably a bias in that I am a science specialist teacher. So what I see is very science focused. But I actually think that a lot of people think that STEM is an add-on to science teaching, and that you then teach science with technology and you bring in the engineering principles and the mathematics into science. That is a general feeling that I get, that STEM is marketed towards science teachers in a lot of ways. I feel like that the maths gets left behind a lot. We've had chats about this because we're already focusing on numeracy heavily in our curriculum and in our classrooms. So embedding that into STEM learning, I feel it gets left behind. Other people think that the STEM is about the digital tech, and we know that digital tech isn't STEM. So I feel like it depends on who you talk to, but for me and where I'm at in my space, I feel like that STEM is seen as, I'm a science teacher, but I'm a STEM teacher, people are calling themselves now. Now, I wouldn't call myself a STEM teacher. I'm a science teacher, and I build in STEM principles and STEM skills perhaps into my science teaching. Well, now, I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you sort of have, actually, because because this is the thing, it does seem quite confusing across the education body as a whole. I mean, some of the narrative that you hear on Twitter through to the formal documents you'd see in a syllabus or something, it does seem quite varied, or even in our own world when we do informal visits to schools, just hearing what people are doing in STEM. And you're right, totally. Sometimes people say, hey, we're doing all this coding stuff, we're totally nailing STEM. And other people say, hey, check out our thing that we just built from an engineering point of view. And it does seem a bit, not quite, I don't know if the word's fractured, but there's certainly some roads to be made further. I guess the best way to describe it.
I totally agree with you, because I think that people aren't very clear about what STEM is. I mean, we know what the acronym stands for and we understand those four areas. But even when you look at our curriculum, if you go into SCASA, which is in WA, or the Australian curriculum, they say, look, this is where STEM is in the curriculum. And then they actually target the specific areas, like here's our science curriculum, here's the technologies curriculum, and here's the maths curriculum. Well, that's just showing where those individual areas sit, but it's not showing how we have STEM embedded into our curriculum at all. Engineering gets a little left behind. It's only vaguely mentioned in the technologies curriculum. So, I mean, even in our curriculum that we have to teach from in Australia, I mean, STEM isn't an integrated across areas curriculum. STEM isn't a subject. So, no wonder people are confused.
No wonder. And actually, we're only talking, who was I trying to remember who I was speaking with a little while ago? Don't you hate that when you can't remember their name? But where there are some high schools that are actually generally creating their own little STEM subject, just off to, it's going, look, we're just going to try and integrate this. And they're doing it across the department. So they're working with, you know, the people on the manual arts side of things through to the people in science and in the IT department, trying to, you know, have teachers come in and do it. But then again, that's a big change on the school timetable.
And definitely, and that's the narrative around the high schools, is that, you know, the challenge of breaking down those silos and working in that way when they are very content focused and needing to cover content in terms of for ATAR and different things. So there's a big challenge there. But in the primary setting, it is a lot more, it's easier for a classroom teacher to embed a STEM type project into learning where they're pulling in all the other subject areas. But in my scenario, as a science specialist teacher, it is harder, because I do need to focus on the science as the primary thing. That's what I'm reporting against. So I'm having to try to bring STEM concepts into my science teaching. So we are guided by what we have to report on, which, I mean, that's not necessarily a good or a bad thing, but it's what it is. So if you're a maths teacher, you have to report on maths and so on. So
yeah, so and this is often the case you hear, that people feel they're a little bit stretched occasionally. But at the same point, you do the best you can.
And I guess that's the whole idea of STEM, when you think about STEM not being a subject area in itself, and that's why I do get confused when we're saying we have STEM teachers, because you do have to be teaching some curriculum and reporting on some curriculum. But I just forgot what I was going to say. Where was I going with that thought? No idea.
That's okay. I was actually just thinking about it. Obviously, speaking from your own experience, when you're at West Beachboro Primary School, I keep on saying public school because you have to bear with me. I'm in New South Wales, so I'm going to say public school without even thinking. But, I mean, obviously, you're doing the science coordination effectively in helping out within the primary school itself, but it's clearly brought you into lots of different areas. I mean, you're a digital tech lead teacher and you're doing coding and Minecraft and all sorts of stuff and created the Girls STEM Club as well. You do sound a bit busy.
Yes, busy is an understatement. But yeah, so that's a role I've kind of fallen into with the digital tech, that we needed someone to head that up in the school, and I'd been involved in an iPad project about 5 years ago. So I fell into it, but I am really passionate about it in the sense of digital tech being embedded in our learning. I don't want to see our students having 1 hour a week of learning digital tech. I mean, as you know, we are a digital society, and I want to see the kids using digital tech for displaying what they know in other subject areas. So I've been passionately advocating for that within our school. So I do, in our science classroom here, we only use digital tech to display learning. We use robots, we use the iPads, we have Seesaw, which is a digital portfolio. So I'm getting the kids to use digital tech tools to display their science learning. So we're not learning how to use digital tech to learn how to use digital tech. We're learning how to use digital tech to give us a voice, to take the students' learning beyond the classroom, to connect, and lots of other things. So I'm really excited about that aspect of my role as well. You said coding and Minecraft, they are a couple of standalone things that I do. So whilst I say we try to embed it, I do have lunchtime clubs where some of those that have a heavier interest in those aspects of digital tech, so the coding, they just get to come and code on something that they really want to do. So whether they're creating a game or something, and in Minecraft, I give them challenges. So they are standalone, they're voluntary, and the kids come en masse at lunchtime to do those things. I can't keep up with them. There's so many kids interested. So,
well, over the years, I mean, I know in our own teaching, we have seen a shift, a change in the ability of kids to operate with digital tech, definitely. Have you found it in your school? Are they finding it easier? Are the kids getting younger and younger to be able to do the same topic that might have been for older kids? Or are they finding any challenges? What are you seeing with your own students?
I think we make an assumption as adults who didn't grow up with tech that our kids are going to come into us being digitally literate. That's a tongue twister saying that. And they are digitally literate in certain aspects of, you know, maybe playing games and stuff, but they actually do need to be taught how to use the digital tools authentically and purposefully, not just for playing. But that said, they do come already with a skill set, I find, that allows them just to pick them up so quickly. And I think it's our teachers, our own fear, and I speak for myself too, that holds back the students in really showing what they can do with the digital tools. So I was very excited. I had an iPad in the early childhood classroom PD last week, so I really went down to our youngest classes and asked, can I come down and show you what we can do with the tech tools? So I spent a lot of Friday down with our pre-primary students, and I can just see that the opportunities that you give them early, they're just going to fly with it. And I'm not talking about them just using apps, I'm talking about them taking photos and videos and showing what they are learning, and that's the real goal. So yes, they do need to learn it, but they pick it up really quickly. And I guess in summary, it's us as teachers who need to lose the fear of, you know, that something might go wrong or they might not do something right, because the kids are really confident and ready for it.
They are, certainly so. And actually something that I've actually noticed over the years is they're certainly improving their ability as digital natives, though it depends on the student, right? If they haven't got the iPad, they're not going to be digital native because they haven't got the equipment at home. But I have noticed, though mainly more in metropolitan schools, less so in regional, that the ability to use simple hand tools has potentially decreased. I mean, obviously, this is subjective. I mean, but oh, yeah, you're going, oh, yeah, in the background. So, because I'm kind of thinking, like, for example, this program we run around Meccano, and this was a breeze 10 years ago. Now it's not. Yep. It's not at all now.
It's really scary. And when I, because we use just digital tech display learning, we're not handwriting, and I'm not taking away from the value of handwriting, but I just want the students to have the opportunity to authentically learn to use digital tech. But in addition to that, with a heavy STEM focus on my science learning, which means we're getting out equipment and we're creating and we're building solutions and that kind of stuff, you see people or kids with scissors and knives and hot glue guns and all these pieces of equipment, and they really can't function very well with them. Tying a knot to make a parachute, for example. I had year four students, there were three students in the class who could tie a knot. So we are getting kids who are really good at using their thumbs to swipe, but they can't do simple things like tie a string into a knot. So it is a big issue, I think, and it's going to get worse if we don't focus on building those skills early on. And even kids at home, young kids at home, are being sat in front of screens instead of doing maybe crafty things like perhaps we used to do. I might be showing my age, but I didn't have any screens at home growing up, so we did crafty things and climb trees, and you know, we were very active, and so we built those kind of skills, fine motor skills, that we needed.
Yeah, and I actually remember my mum actually saying to me when my little daughter was about to go to school, she says, "You might be a teacher, but just making sure that you remember, I'm less worried about her ABCs and more worried about whether she can hold a pair of scissors and tie a shoelace."
Yeah.
And I suppose just those simple fine motor skills do make a difference. If you've got to run a STEM project, I mean, you've only got a finite amount of time before you've got to move on to the next topic in the primary school. If the kids can't handle the equipment, definitely, it's hard enough for them to be creative. That in.
I know. And so you have to be quite clever in the sense that when you find the three students who can tie a knot, then you create a knot tying station and all the kids go to them. You're right. We don't have time in, like you've alluded to, our very busy curriculum and people being under the pump in that way before. And we're really pushing it out as it is just to get that kind of STEM project done and them to build their model or whatever it is. And so we don't have time to sit and spend an hour learning how to tie a knot or to cut with scissors. And so it is quite an issue. But you said Meccano, and I've got a huge love for Lego. So I've got in my classroom a Lego wall and a Lego table. So I got Lego boards and glued them over a big table. And just the interest in Lego for our students who have had no access to Lego at home. My girls' STEM club that you referred to before, we had a day of doing some building with Lego, and they had not used Lego, many of them, which is super interesting.
Really, what year are they in when they haven't used Lego?
Year five and six girls. So wow. For our STEM club, we were building onto the little Edison robots as part of a project. And they said, "Oh, I've never used Lego before." And I'm like, "How?" I grew up just loving Lego. We had all those road boards and I'd fill the whole lounge room with a community that you'd build. And again, as I said, we didn't have screens. So that's what I did. But I'm a huge fan of Lego. Cannot get enough Lego.
It's not just about just, hey, snap some blocks together. I mean, there's planning involved, as well as, I mean, once they learn how to put the blocks together, there's advanced skills in maybe gear ratios. I mean, I know when I used to teach in high school, that's exactly what we did, to talk about gear ratios and torque and whatnot. We would get different gears and have tractor pull races or fastest car and all that type of thing. It is a really good way to learn how simple machines connect together to learn something that's quite compound and complex.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I'm just trying to offer these different opportunities to our students who may not necessarily get them at home. And I mean, we've got a very multicultural community here. And so students are coming from very varied backgrounds, and you don't necessarily understand what the priorities are for those families in those cultures. So, I mean, maybe Lego just wasn't even a thing for them. So, you know, we don't know what our students are being exposed to at home or what they're families prioritise. So I just try to offer as many opportunities for them to build those skills here as I can. Now, you mentioned my girls' STEM club. Did you want me to talk about STEM?
Yeah, let's hear about it. Go for it.
So that's a thing that's in the fourth year now for me here. And it started off as a girls' science club. So I was very excited, and I had two groups each week after school for an hour and a half of girls coming, and we did science, and it was very hands-on science, chemistry, and we did science of beauty, and we did food science, and it was very, you know, it was all lovely and exciting. But I started to realize that girls don't need to be hooked into those aspects of science. They already really enjoy them. So reflecting on all my learning and being involved in STEM chat and writing STEM programs and stuff, I actually felt like that what our girls need is not the science of beauty or the science of food, because they're already passionate about blowing things up in chemistry and all that. They needed to learn to develop those STEM skills that we talk about, like the collaboration, the critical thinking, communication and creativity, in things that aren't just one-off sessions where you do it and then you walk away and you come back the next week and you do another thing. So the focus for me with the girls is creating some projects where they're working long-term at things. They have to stick at things when they're hard, because I find that's something that our students are not necessarily very good at. They want to do things quickly. They want to build the thing and then they want to move on. So for them to slow down and work through those processes of let's have an idea, let's think about a problem and let's design something and let's build something and then let's look at did that work and then analyze it and rebuild and go through all those steps, they don't really love it. So I've actually said to them, you know, I'm here to help you build the skills that will help you get a job or be successful in a job. And also the other thing about with girls, and we know the stats about girls not going to STEM, I've actually said to this group of girls, I'm not suggesting you have to go into a STEM field or that you need to be an engineer or, you know, you need to do computer programming. It's more about exposing them to those ideas of developing skills that will help them be successful in whatever they want to do. Like I said, you know, I didn't want to be an engineer. I didn't want to do computer programming. So I'm really just trying to tap into their passions and help them see that STEM, in a sense, is more about skills they need for life than you need to be an engineer, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely does. I'm just trying to picture what sort of projects have they been working on this year?
It's very early days because we took a few weeks to start. So I've actually done, at the beginning of the thing, beginning of the term, we actually just did more about who are you and what are you passionate about. So we really talked about how STEM is about problem solving, but I wanted them to have authentic problems. So at this point in time, it was just what are the things you care about? What's the thing that would make you get up, you know, excited about the day? So, and then they made little characters. I don't know if you're familiar with Little Mr. Men and the Little Miss characters.
Yes, yes.
So they designed their own Little Miss, who it was in relation to the fact that they've got a Little Miss inventor now that they've released, finally, a sort of a less stereotypical version of the Little Miss.
Yeah.
And so we talked about this Little Miss inventor and then who would they be? And so that was, you know, the first few weeks is really just trying to find out what their interests are and what they want to be, which is great to see. And so then from there, I've actually been trying to tap into the community locally through Twitter and other places to connect them with women that are doing the things that they're really keen to do. So, for example, one girl really wants to be a pilot. So I've connected with the Women's Pilots Association here in Perth, and we're going to be able to go out to the airport and she's going to be able to come and talk to the girls. You know, so that's, I try to connect them with people that are doing the thing that they're really interested in. And whilst we've been doing that, then we've moved on into kind of small STEM projects where the focus is on them working through that design process. So they're not at the moment solving any really big problems. It's more about let's learn to work together. Let's learn to do, you know, a design and then create and then analyze and then present what we've done to others. So at this point in time, we're just building some of those skills. But my goal with them is to move them forward into some sorts of competitions where we're getting involved with the wider community. So, for example, RoboGirls at the University of WA has a competition coming up. Last year, I involved them in something called Game Changer. So they create something and then they take it along and they present it and it's judged on a whole range of principles. So there's a couple of things like that. And then there's the Tech Girls Are Superheroes, which is an app building competition. So the goal is to move them, build the skills and the confidence in working in a group and doing those kind of design things, and then move them into some bigger competitions where they're doing something that's outside of our school.
So sounds like you're doing a bunch. It's great.
Well, yeah, it is busy. I'm like, I'm trying to get the girls sorted to go to the university following the Saturday following Easter, because there's a science and engineering fair. That's the start of that Robo Girls thing. So it's about me just trying to show them the possibilities and what's out there. But yeah, it is busy, so, but I enjoy it.
You know, I bet, and you can hear it. It's coming right through. I can totally hear it. It actually just makes me wonder, are there any partner schools in your local area that you work with as well?
It'd be amazing. How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
I was getting the, they would come over and work with the girls in club and bring, you know, equipment over and work with us in that way. So that's something that I'm trying to build some more connections, even just with community. And really it's for self, well, it's really because I need some money. So I really want to connect with local organisations who would like to help us out in that regard. I was really lucky in the past. I got some funding from the ANZ Bank.
Fantastic.
And it just allowed me to be able to take the girls places and give them opportunities that you couldn't otherwise. So money's always a thing. And I don't want to ask the girls to pay to be part of this. This is an opportunity I want them to be able to have, despite whether they have money for lunch or not. Even if you ask them for $2, it can be off-putting enough if you don't have lunch for the day. So that's, yeah, I am going to try to look into that a bit more. But yeah, definitely with the high school, not so much with any primary schools in the area, but I'm often having teachers from local schools in WA come and visit me to see what we're doing here with science and digital tech.
And you're clearly connecting with them with primary STEM chat anyway, which is a very good thing. And it's obviously growing too, which is fantastic. Makes me kind of wonder too, I guess, if you had that magic wand that we all seem to wish we had, that sometimes people actually have, but if you had that magic wand, you had to wave it and have it really work for your school, I mean, what would you love to see happen if you had that ability just to wave and say, this would be a perfect representation of how STEM should be taught?
Well, I don't think I do it well in the sense that STEM shouldn't be in the science classroom 1 hour a week. And so I'm working within constraints of timetabling and my role, as I mentioned before, as a science specialist, I need to teach science. So I would love to see our school community get involved in projects where the classroom teachers are doing STEM and we're doing authentic projects that maybe are problem solving within our school community, and that all of the kids from K to 6 are involved and the parents are involved. And so, I mean, I do read of some schools where they are doing these kind of projects, so there's something that I could look at. But like you mentioned before, I feel like there's pressure on our classroom teachers too to cover a lot. And with new things coming into our curriculum this year, with having to do languages and having to do technologies and having to do all of the other things you're already doing, I feel like I don't want to put pressure on the teachers, but I would like to, in a perfect world, see that being the STEM isn't a 1 hour a week thing. It's something that our school does. It's in our HASS lessons, it's in our health lessons. And I think it comes down to that the STEM is actually the wrong name for it. That's a whole nother few hour topic.
Yeah, well, that is too. I mean, you speak with in certain circles, they then put an A in it or an R in it or whatever it is. It's all different people, different ideas. And
I don't even think it's about what letters are in it either. Yeah. So we can have the STEM debate and that often, and primary STEM chat, we've been there.
No,
we'll be coming back there again. But I actually think when we have this learning called something that's an acronym of things brought together, it doesn't actually show what it should look like. And I think people just, we spoke about it a bit earlier, just see it as that science, tech, engineering and maths. I don't have time for that because we're doing HASS and we're doing a project on the first fleet. But if it was something else, I don't know. We haven't come up with a word for it.
Yeah, it seems to circle around.
If it was a way of learning,
yes,
that was integrated and problem solving. Like, is it project-based learning? Is it, you know, so you can bandy all these terms about, but I feel like just calling it STEM is the reason why it's not done maybe as well as I would like to see it done.
Now, you literally took the words out of my mouth. It seems to circle around problem solving and creating something to solve a particular problem in a given time frame and materials and expertise in that room, irrespective of what the actual problem is. It seems to me that's what it actually is. Maybe just call it problem solving, which is probably not a good way, considering that it's all about preparing kids for the future to do exactly that in their industries and occupations and even in their home life. I mean, that's the whole point, right?
Oh, exactly. And I mean, I've actually said to my students at times, you know, you're not going to go away and remember anything I taught you about science. But if I have equipped you with the skills to work in a group and to problem solve or think critically, then I feel like I've done my job. I mean, you're not going to remember that there's five animal groups, or maybe they will, but you know, those kind of content-based stuff that I deliver and that you hang this STEM type learning on are Googleable. They can go and look that up later, but I want them to leave my classroom with skills that will help them do whatever they want to do in life, even if it's not in the traditional STEM subjects. So, yeah, I mean, we, like I said, we bandy this about a lot in STEM chat and in conversations in life and at PD sessions I do. And I don't know that I have an answer, but I do feel like that we do need to repackage it if we want to do it well.
Yeah. And actually just, I guess that there'll be people listening to this who are coming to grips with implementing a new program like what you're getting into at your school. I mean, what sort of advice would you have for those people as they just start out on that particular road?
I guess like anything, start small, because I think sometimes we just have such big ideas and aspirations for how it's going to look. And so whilst, like I said, even here, I haven't got where I want to be yet, but it's about starting small and just tinkering away and being patient. Like if you're some sort of STEM leader or digital tech leader or science leader, I don't know what kind of roles people would be, where you're trying to implement this across a whole school, I think it's about being patient and letting the other teachers see successes you're having and in a sense come to you. I think the more we push things onto others and say you must do this or thou shalt, then you get that kickback and the fight, and I don't have time for that. But by being patient and just slowly leading by example, I'm finding that the teachers are slowly getting on board. Now, that goes against everything in my nature to be patient, and I just want everyone to do it now, but it pays dividends. And the other thing is that it's messy, and you won't always know the thing that you need, you know, that the students will sometimes know more than you, particularly with tech. And I think just embracing the mess and that not every lesson will go to plan. I feel like there's a perfectionist in me that wants to nail every lesson as the perfect lesson, and you come away kind of kicking yourself and that didn't work. Or, but this kind of learning isn't, you know, follow the bouncing ball and in a straight line and you go off on tangents. And so I think just be prepared or willing just to follow the student's lead a little bit and to be messy and noisy and maybe not the same sort of traditional teaching and learning that you would have been used to.
It is, and it's very much something you hear about in startup culture and beyond, with it simply fail well, fail fast, fail often, but get back up each time.
Yeah. And that's so true. But yeah, it is hard for some, and teachers have very high expectations of themselves. Like they just, you know, they're here with the best intentions, wanting to make a difference. And when you have a lesson that doesn't go to plan, or things don't seem to be going well, or the kids don't want to persist at the project that you started, or they have nothing they're passionate about, don't give up.
Oh, absolutely.
It's there. It's there.
And we've all been there. We've all been there before. In fact, that's something we concentrated quite a lot early on in the episodes with this podcast, was that actually just the epic failures we've had in our classrooms, because we've all had them. and I'm just wondering, is there any particular story you could recount off the top of your head? I mean, just putting you on the line here, right? But just out of interest, like, is there a particular thing where you look back now going, you know what, I probably should have been able to pick that this was not going to go well?
I guess it's not really an epic failure, but it's been a very recent change of direction, because I guess we've sort of put the cart before the horse, and this is more about digital tech than STEM, but we've been doing coding and with the senior classes, and they've been working on projects. But when you're on a, you're online and you're in an environment where we're sharing things on Seesaw, so it's an online community, we were getting some inappropriate comments and inappropriate use of the tech. And so I've actually had to go, whoa, hang on, like we're doing all this stuff and I'm getting them to develop all these digital skills and use all this tech, but we've never actually stopped and talked about how should we be digital citizens? What makes us a good digital citizen? So I've sort of just done that as small parts of the learning. So I had to go, well, no, we're not coding this week. We're actually spending time looking at our iPad rules and protocols and saying, what did I miss? And so I've actually had to pull it right back and go. So they sat with me on Friday and we went through and they decided, you know, you haven't covered this or you haven't covered that. And they were involved in that. So I guess sometimes I feel like we push forward with the learning that we want to take place, but we haven't given the kids the skills they need to work safely in that environment, whether that's with STEM learning or digital tech or anything. So I guess that was just a reflection for me that I went about it the wrong way and I've had to change that. So I've had that with digital tech tools as well, where I've tried something like Padlet and different things online and been so excited about the potential for use that I haven't given the students perhaps not so much the rules but the protocols for use, and then you get issues and then you have to deal with issues that should never have been there because you've rushed in. I rush in because I'm excited.
Yeah, well, I think we're all guilty of that. And actually, every different jurisdiction, state, nation, whatever, would have their own standards around the use of IT for sure. But if you're wondering, I know there's one which handles from a global point of view. If you're listening on in, just head on to ISTE.org, so International Society for Technology and Education.org, so ISTE.org/standards/for educators. You will find the standards for learners, teachers and everything else around sort of how to help shape that conversation for students, because that is a big one too. Because, I mean, I can totally know what you're talking about, because I've done the same thing. You get really excited about delivering this really cool app I found or whatever, and then the kids go about, well, frankly, being kids.
And, I mean, you don't blame them. You've just given them so much power. Like, you can sit there on Padlet and you can do a poop emoji and everyone can see it instantly. Yep. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, but that's my fault in not having those kind of conversations before. So, like I said, I rush into things so excitedly because I'm like, this is so cool. You guys have to see how cool this is. And they're just interested in doing things that kids would do.
That's right. But then they learn very quickly that they can't do that.
Oh, and that's fine. Yes. And so I've actually often had to say to them, look, I was wrong. I should have done this first, you know, and I'm getting much better at saying, oh, that didn't work, did it? Let's stop. And so I think being willing to do that in front of the kids and to say it was my mistake, you know, this, I should have done this better, is quite powerful too, for them to see that you're acknowledging that it was you.
Yeah, so that's actually the a position of strength that all leaders actually aspire to emulate, to be honest, because if we say we're the sage of the sage, I mean, eventually you don't come across as real or fallible, and therefore whenever you say something that actually is really true and does work, it actually comes across with more power in the first place.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Rachel, for popping on the podcast. I know you're very busy, especially considering it's a Monday. You've got to plan out your week. What have you got happening this week?
I've got Girls STEM Club this afternoon, so I'm just getting ready for that. And I'm presenting our digital tech curriculum to our staff on Wednesday for the first time. So planning around that as well, and just regular sorts of learning. Plus, it's Easter.
It is. Yes,
it's coming. I had to double check.
No, you're totally right. Someone just reminded me that yesterday I went, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm too busy worried about what's happening this week, let alone next weekend. You're right. It's very much the case.
Yeah, so. Oh, and last week was a very scattered week with Harmony Day and different things going on, you know, incursions. So it was a disrupted week. So sometimes I just look forward to getting the kids in the classroom and doing the things we do. So hopefully this week, other than, you know, Friday being out, will just be a regular week in the classroom.
No, and it sounds like, really, it does sound like West Beachboro is doing a fantastic job for science, tech, engineering, maths for sure. And look, listeners, if you want to get in touch, obviously, no doubt you would love to. Rachel, how do we get in touch with you?
Well, you should be following along on Twitter at Rachel there, and that's R-A-C-H. AELLEHR. And I also have a secondary Twitter account, which is just my classroom one, which is WBPS. So that's for West Beachbury Primary School, Science Rocks. It actually doesn't have the two S's in there. Do I need to spell that? Probably
we'll
do.
We'll pop it all in the show
you
notes
can put
too.
A link up.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so that's one where I'm just posting all the stuff happening in class, and my other Twitter account is where you'll find primary STEM chats. So follow along on that on Thursday nights. So that's the main ways to get in touch with me. I'm usually, if you send me a message via Twitter, I'll usually respond. So I usually get back pretty quickly if I can. So.
Yeah, no worries. No doubt we'll catch you on Thursday night. And I know you got a vibrant chat on its way, considering what's coming up with what the Minister brought up about STEM. And we know education is a bit of a contentious field. It always has been, always will be. I think it, the fact that you're doing the best for your students and helping others do the same is really where it matters. Thank you very much, Rachel. And we'll catch you next time soon, no doubt.
Thank you, Ben. I really appreciate the time.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
Well, there you go. That was Rachel Lear, who very much would be an awesome teacher for any student. It doesn't matter whether it was primary or not, but imagine being in her primary classes. I mean, as a science specialist, she's very much putting all the variables and bits and pieces in there, but she's got the T and the E and the M also going with STEM as well, which is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, her work with the PLN, the Professional Learning Network through Twitter on Primary STEM Chat, is amazing. And one of the things about this whole STEM movement is it really comes down to problem solving. And it's not just about us being the sage on stage saying, all right, kids, solve this problem. And then the kids come back with, they've solved the problem, and you do this over and over again. Kids can be documenting their own learning and learning from each other. And that's exactly what Brett Salarkas talked about on one of our previous podcasts.
They can film it. And the last 2 years that I've taught about the kids, like capturing the rocket launch off the bamboo skewer in slow motion, and then collating their experiments and collating their knowledge and making like a mini documentary. So they're able to sort of voice over, narrate their own learning. They've got this beautiful digital resource that is a reflection of their learning. It's like a journal, I suppose, of their learning. Yeah. But they've got their own footage. So they're not just downloading stuff off YouTube, which we often do. And, they're not just consuming content, but they're actually creating their own content. So it's tangible. They're getting in, they're making their experiments, but then they're actually building their own sort of content as well in the project. And for me, that's magic.
We hope you've been enjoying the Physics Ed podcast. We love making science make sense. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? If you're outside of Australia, you can connect with us via a virtual excursion. See our website for more.
Yes, you can definitely tell that Brett Salarkas is one of those passionate educators who really wants to get the most out of their students, get them engaged in their own learning rather than him just being the sage on stage, without a doubt. You can check out some of his work through Twitter, where he heads up and co-founded the group called Aussie Ed, which meets up on a Sunday evening Australian Eastern Standard Time. And that particular grab was from the episode back in episode 7 of the Phys Ed podcast, long time ago, but I know that it's well worth your time. That particular episode was actually recorded at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night, because it was the only time the man actually had the time to chat. It was a busy, busy time for him and me, but it was good time nonetheless. Anyway, I hope you're making your classrooms engaging, your museum sites engaging, or wherever you happen to be working. I hope you're having fun with it too. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Phys Education, and this is the Phys Ed podcast. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au